rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi everybody, it's time for the Ruck, now our twice weekly edition of the Times and Sunday Times Rugby podcast. We're coming to you today from our studios in downtown Auckland. We haven't actually found that town, Auckland, yet, but it's got to be around here somewhere. The Lions tour is off and running. Before we discuss it, we should also say that this has been beamed into the news headquarters building at London Bridge. On Saturday, our colleagues were locked in while the terrorist incident and the aftermath was enacted all around them. And very proud to say that our chief news sub-editor was caught up in it and immediately went to the office and filed, and it was soon on the front page. That's what journalism is and what the best journalism does. And maybe or maybe not, that's better than shaky pictures taken on someone's mobile. That's up to you to decide. And also great scenes this morning in New Zealand of the resistance gatherings in London and Manchester. Thoughts with everyone who's affected. We'll be joined by Owen Slot soon to look ahead to the Lions Auckland game. Owen is just finessing his latest piece and his hair before coming on. He's the only man who wants to look great for radio. I'm joined by Nick Kane, veteran journalist, now of the Rugby Paper. Nick and I have seen a few things over the years. And Nick, what did we see on Saturday evening? A one-score win over a second-class semi-professional team. Were we seeing jet lag and understandable disorganisation, or should we already be panicking about these Lions?
I'm not sure that we should be panicking about them just yet, but it was an extremely disappointing performance. The jet lag side of things is something that seems to be brought into the equation when people don't do as well as expected. But a lot of the time in the modern game, with professional standards, certainly in the Super Rugby side of things where they do a hell of a lot of travelling, it's not something that's often brought up as an issue anymore. I think that in terms of organisation, I think that there's definitely, the Lions have, if not an excuse, they certainly couldn't expect to be fully prepared for a game like that in terms of their systems.
And this morning we've had comments from John Spencer, the Lions manager, in which he says that they were not given enough time to prepare. Well done, Mr. Spencer. I think it was about 1993 when we were saying that, both of us in the Sunday Times. So well done, the Lions manager, for working out that 3 days in jet lag is not a sufficient preparation. But another thing that you remarked upon was one or two of the Lions look just a little bit heavy. At the end of a long season, you wouldn't expect them to be greyhound fit, but did you think one or two of the big fours were carrying a little bit?
I definitely did. I think that we've known for a long, long time that New Zealand's game is built on really rapid tempo. The greatest speed game, if you like, in the world. So the Lions knew exactly what was coming up here. Wales had been through it last season. Sam Warburton, the Lions captain, said, I think even on the day of the squad announcement, he said, look, everybody has to realise in this squad that however many K they're clocking up in a Pro 12 or Premiership game, they're going to have to be looking at a significant increment on that in terms of what's required of them here. It was surprising because you would have thought that coming here, the one thing that is absolutely crystal clear is the level of fitness has got to be at its best. To compete against this world champion New Zealand side, it is absolutely non-negotiable And so it was a little bit surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people, and possibly notably the likes of Ian Henderson, started well, but they tended to fade. And that was why I made Alan Wynne-Jones the man of the match, because this great veteran, who's played so many games on his third Lions tour, stuck it out as well as anyone and was still putting it in towards the end. But, you know, if you're saying that we're already saying that fitness is an issue, well, this is, as you say, this is not the place to be a degree or two under with your endurance. And I just bring that's on to Super Rugby, because Saturday morning I watched the Crusaders play, unbeaten team, and the pace at which they played was blistering. Actually, a lot of it was rubbish, I thought, because they made mistakes, they were too fast. But do you think that all New Zealand teams here have got the chance now, not so much to outplay the Lions, but just to outrun them?
I think that that's probably always been the intention. They've always known that that is the area where European teams will struggle. It's not something that you can just click your fingers and reach. It is a conditioning level that is has been worked at by them for years, frankly. So, but the game in Europe is actually faster than they think it is. It's not a massive quantum leap. When you look at games like, for example, the European Cup final between Saracens and Clermont, it was played at a very, very high rate. And in terms of the sheer physicality, that will be one thing that the New Zealanders will perhaps be less used to.
It's ridiculous, I think, to make instant judgments in being critical of people. But what about the pluses from it? Who sort of got off the Lions tour at least on the front foot?
Well, you'd say that two of the back rowers, Talupe Faletau at number 8, who, of course, you know, with Billy Vunipola's unavailability, there's a large load of responsibility or expectation on his shoulders. Ross Moriarty had a pretty impressive game, although he coughed up the ball a couple of times in contact. In the backs, Ben Teo showed his power and also his footballing nous. He cuts good angles, Teo.
Sorry, I interrupted you there. There's this thing about the back three. I mean, I've always been worried about the Lions' back three, because we know that the New Zealanders kick a lot. They kick high, they box kick, chase like Olympic sprinters. Very important for the back three to act in concert, to get up off the ground and claim the ball. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the Lions conceded any number of points and also position, because the back three did not dominate the high ball.
I'd agree with that entirely. I mean, my comments after the game were that, Stuart Hogg perhaps is used to, when he makes a break, he's used to it being definitive. That didn't happen here. The scrambling defence from the part-timers in the New Zealand Provincial Barbarian side was exceptional. They fought for absolutely everything. Nothing was a lost cause. And there were a number of occasions, particularly in attack, where chances were butchered just because they didn't expect the claws, if you like, of the scrambling defence to be quite as sharp as they were.
That's pretty well done and dusted with that game then. Massive week ahead of the tour. Just one other item from Europe, highlights this morning of the French Top 14 final, in which Clermont beat Toulon, the eternal runners-up, actually won. It just made you think that we're so lucky in Europe, because we have these massive stadiums and the occasions are so much bigger. Whereas I think you use the word curmudgeonly for New Zealand crowds. But first of all, your thoughts on Clermont, the eternal bridesmaids. Secondly, the sense of occasion is slightly diminished here, because the stadiums are not huge, the crowds are not noisy. Would you agree with that?
Just going to Clermont first, I agree, you know, that their bridesmaids tag has gone on for so long, you thought that they'd never tie the knot. They did, thankfully, this weekend. I didn't feel that they were worthy of beating Saracens in that final. I thought that the best team won on that occasion, but they're a fine side, and I'm very pleased. And also, I mean, it's something that we've discussed, their supporters have got to be, you know, among the best in the world. They, you know, they come out rain or shine in large numbers for this site.
Very good. The eternal bridesmaids and tying the knot. We bring you all the best metaphors. Nick the metaphor cane. We're going to let him go now to continue his training program. But just before we do, Nick, Pomeroy, you were seen driving out of a strange car, an establishment called Rent-A-Dent. Were you hiring a car or entering a stock car race?
A little bit of both, I think. The Rent-A-Dent is very much a feature of life down under, both in Australia and New Zealand. I think it's a great concept. You can pick up an old bagger for very little.
It wouldn't be the first time you've done that. But let's be fair. The good news is for Rugby Paper accountants, Nick is keeping costs to a minimum. Nick, thanks.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Very much. Slot is left. And joined us.
Easy boys. From 15, Lee Halfpenny, Jack Nowell, Jared Payne, Robbie Henshaw, Elliot Daly, halfbacks. Reece Webb and Dan Bigger, front row, Jack McGrath, Ken Owens, Dan Cole, two Englishmen in the second row, Maro Itoje and Courtney Laws, and then a mix-up in the back row of James Haskell, Justin Tipperick and CJ Stander. The replacements, Rory Best, Joe Marler, Carl Sinclair, Ian Henderson, Peter Omani, Greg Laidlaw, Johnny Sexton and Liam Williams.
Stuart, what's the thinking behind this team?
There's a few partnerships there that are quite important. I think Gatland knows that this is probably the first. This is the game that winning is everything. They can't afford to travel down to the South Island having lost this one, and they know that. And I think because of that, Ken Owens has got himself a really good second row combination. The two Englishmen, Toje and Laws, and we know each other. At halfback, the team is shaped by the Ospreys, Webb and Bigger. Neither have been on the greatest form, but they know each other's game, and they will be expected to put the Lions in a better place than they were for an hour on Saturday. And in the centre, defensive is going to be really important. The Blues have got great strength out wide, real pace and footwork, and I think it's no coincidence that Henshaw and Jared Payne, possibly the most experienced and best organised defensive pair of centres, are starting there to nullify the Blues.
Any other theories that
Stuart
missed out there about this team?
To what extent is obviously shaping up for Saturday, and we know what the next Saturday team's going to be. And it, more than I'd expect at this stage, you can see what he's thinking, isn't it?
Who hasn't played yet? George North hasn't played yet. Jonathan Davis hasn't played yet. Conor Murray hasn't played yet. Now, I think they're all in Warren's mind as your likely test starters. There's only one other player who hasn't started or been on a bench yet, which is Sean O'Brien. And we know he's been struggling with an injury, so he can't read quite so much into that. I think the players in this Wednesday team now have to play their way into a Saturday team. I know everything that Warren said doesn't work like that. Everyone gets a chance, and it's an equal, everyone on a level playing field from the beginning. But I just don't think it looks like that now. I think the Crusaders game is just so massive that I think he wants to put his big team against them.
One of the New Zealand journalists, Jimmy McCranky, on the weekend, said they're all rubbish. So is this a sort of credibility game as well as a team to sort of a test, a match to sort of a test team?
Well, It's a massive few days, isn't it? I mean, has there ever been a Lions tour like it where you can go, we're in, if they're two bad games and you're thinking this is on the verge of disaster? I mean, it seems preposterous to say that, but these two games are huge, and we all know they could lose the pair of them.
Stuart, we did be in the press conference in which Warren was asked about the pace of the game. He kept on mentioning it, and it's almost like we've got to sort of match them with 15 Usain, sorry, the Lions have to match them with 15 Usain Bolts, or actually play like the Keystone Cops. If anyone remembers the Keystone Cops, is that all that the Lions are here for? Surely it's not pace, it's change of pace.
Every time I hear a Lions coach or a Lions player talking about matching New Zealand pace, my heart sinks a little bit. And every time an Englishman, an Irishman, a Welshman or a Scotsman says that, a New Zealander smiles. New Zealand are the dominant team in the world because they have been forcing the rest of us to try and adopt their pace. They are the masters of that, and you can't in the space of 6 weeks say, right, we're going to take on New Zealand at their own game. All the Lions can do in this instance is imitate, and imitators will only flatter New Zealand. That's not to say the Lions must play with pace, but they have to control the tempo. New Zealand will want a quick game. From the Lions' point of view, they have to impose their game in the tight, and they have to be able, almost like a sports car, to just stay in a low gear and then accelerate. New Zealand will want to be playing in overdrive all the way. The faster the game, start to end, the greater the tempo, the less chance the Lions have. The more the Lions can sort of bruise around in second gear and scrum and lie out and kick in corners, which is why I was so disappointed Saturday, because they didn't do that, the more chance they have then of really striking and accelerating in that final quarter of the field.
Slightly worrying on the weekend was the back three just couldn't control the kick and the high ball. And I think most of the points that were scored came from the back three. I was talking to Nick Kane about this earlier. Is this back three against Auckland better, and will they be safer under the high ball?
I think everyone will be better in any facet of the game than they were on Saturday. Maybe Faletau's performance aside, just for this whole thing that they played after 3 days. I read one analyst saying that actually your third day after crossing the world is the hardest day to perform. So it wasn't like they had 3 days to get better; they had 3 days to get worse before improving. So they have to be better. For me, a really interesting part of that whole equation is Stuart Hogg, and to what extent he's damaged his copybook from that. So next Saturday, does Warren pick? So as we already mentioned, he's got George North and Liam Williams, who have to have a start. So does he pick Liam Williams at 15, which would suggest that Stuart Hogg's sort of in problem territory already, or does he put Liam Williams on the wing and give Hogg another start at the back?
I'm glad you said that about the third day, because my performance was terrible on the third day of this tour, and that was why. I'm just going to ask both of you guys now, can they win against Auckland? What are the key things that they have to do? Stuart?
They can win. It's going to be a tough game. I watched the Blues train today, and I spoke to their management and a few of their players afterwards, and if I was a Blues fan, I'd be a little bit worried, because well, we're saying this Lions tour is absolutely huge. In this part of the world, Super Rugby is everything, and they see this as a bit of a free hit. They see it as a chance to go out and express themselves. Now, I go back 24 years, and I remember going to places like Napier, losing to Hawke's Bay. They weren't as talented as this team, but they wanted it so much. If the Blues go out and they don't want it, and they just think we're going to throw it around and see where it gets us, we'll just run them off their feet, then I think they will find themselves losing. And I think the Lions have a great chance of imposing their game. And I'll take the Lions by about 18-22. And as Owen says, it really is a game they cannot afford to lose. They can't go down to the South Island with a defeat here.
Did you say Lions to win by 18-22 points?
No, 18-22, by four.
Okay, he's been accurate, that's all. Now, can the Lions confound Angus Macbeth, the Kiwi journalist who rubbished them on the weekend?
Well, of course they can, because anyone who has tried to make any direct observations and conclusions from Saturday is just kidding themselves. if you think that the way they played on Saturday is a reflection on those players back at home when they haven't had just crossed the world, then you haven't watched anything. So we all know the chances are this Lions team is going to be beaten, but we also know that that what we saw on Saturday is not remotely a reflection on the way they are.
All I'll say is, in concluding, is it's a real game, and like we had in Australia and South Africa when the provincial games were denial of the Lions touring ethic. So at least we got a flat out game.
Just one other thing, Jones. Did you see the Maori welcome at Waitangi on Sunday?
Yes.
Is it true that you have been so won over by that you are now painting your buttocks?
That's true, and I'm also gurning and lolling my tongue out as well. I think it was slightly, if I'm honest, slightly downgraded by the events in London, but everybody enjoyed it. Sam Warburton spoke magnificently, and I've had enough hackers for a lifetime, but no doubt there's a few still coming. Okay, thank you to Nick Kane and Owen. Just before we go, we're going to bring Nick Kane back. He's going to do a review of the New Zealand sporting press. As always, the New Zealand press are never one-eyed, they're never inward-looking. They always take the global view, and clearly their writing ability is somewhere up there above Oscar Wilde, Brendan Behan, and Ian Blyth. But Nick, what headlines, fair headlines, have caught your eye?
Well, I thought that it was very balanced stuff on the first weekend. Gatz's toothless Lions, coach blames jet lag.
Yeah, that's very biased. What else have we got? Anything else?
Yeah, for openers, this must go down as an abject failure.
Yeah, that's pretty balanced. Any others?
Barbars give poor Lions a massive wake-up call. And just for to really give it absolute balance, lead-footed tourists strike fear into no one.
Is there anyone who's not been written off as an abject failure in the Lions team? Did you spot anyone, or are they 41 utter useless idiots?
Well, there was one reference that I heard, which was that they may have one victory under their belts, but if they play like that, that will be the last win that they have on New Zealand soil this time round.
That's pretty balanced, and for goodness sake, we won't be entering any awards this year, because the award winners surely are all already guaranteed. Thank you, Nick.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.